Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that always tries to be even-handed, even if it does tend more toward comedy than anything remotely tragic. Color me the straight man here, setting the stage for my colleagues to deliver their clever bon mot. The distinction between comedy and tragedy comes up this week as we look at two films that couldn't be more different. Men, written and directed by Alex Garland, is a serious, if ultimately addled, look at the threat that a woman feels from the men she encounters on a hoped-for holiday of recovery. And The Duke, directed by the late Roger Michell, also is a serious story, this one about the theft of a valuable painting, though it's told in a lighthearted and heartwarming way that tends far more toward comedy. Let's begin this week's show by heading toward a remote house in the English countryside that just may harbor ghosts. Whether those ghosts are real or whether they're figments of a woman's imagination is never made really clear. And while that is mostly writer-director Garland's intent, it doesn't, in the end, do due justice to the subject it addresses. Jessie Buckley stars as Harper, a woman fleeing from a decidedly traumatic incident involving her late husband. Harper has come to an English country village surrounded by acres and acres of green fields and woods. But instead of peace, what Harper finds is further disquiet. Her graphic flashbacks of her trauma exacerbated by the various men, a property manager, a vicar, a belligerent boy, a police officer, not to mention a nude woodsman, she encounters, each one played by the same actor, Rory Kinnear. All of this serves the current blooming of woman's empowerment begun by the Me Too movement, and both Buckley and Kinnear are superb in their respective roles. Everything loses steam in the final half hour, though, as Garland's feel for grand guignol explicitness takes over, and any sense of seriousness gets lost in a serio-comic display of latex-laced gore.
And you have a problem with that?
Yeah, I don't know. The way you described it, I was like, well, I'm sold.
Right, because who wouldn't be? I must say, this is a movie that I think has fodder for great conversation. And so I hope that we have that here today, because this movie is not going to be for everyone.
Boy, but it is
going to be for some people. And ironically, for those of you who know my aversion to the horror genre, usually, not because it scares me, but because I think it's fake, really appreciated this film. You can't say you enjoyed this film, although there are things that are enjoyable about it, most notably watching Jessie Buckley's performance, because she really is quite the star, as we've noticed in the past, most notably in the recent Oscar-nominated film, The Lost Daughter. It's hard to determine whether this film, how much of it is allegorical, how much of it is real, and what's happening throughout. But we do know in Men, nice pithy title, which I think is suitable and appropriate and should be a foreshadowing of what we're about to see. We are dealing with a woman's grief. We are dealing with a woman's uncertainty. We are dealing with a woman's angst. We are dealing with a woman's pain. And we're also dealing with a woman's fear, and we don't know exactly where the fear comes from. But as Dan indicated, she decides to get away from her home in London after the tragic, quote, accident of her husband. And she finds herself in what I automatically found to be a creepy setting. Those of us who were from the West, who like open vistas and so forth, this is exactly the opposite of that. It's this sort of forested, green, overarching branch setting that automatically makes you think that something could easily go awry. But she encounters a series, not by her choice because she wants to be alone, she encounters a series of men who are threatening, who are mysterious, who happen to share something significant in common with one another, as portrayed by the character actor Rory Kinnear. So Men is, you know, it sort of goes along this path of maybe a more or less typical horror show. And then it takes a turn or jumps the shark, depending
you
on your
that.
Perspective.
We said that in the film. It jumps the shark right at each other.
So, But it does work as a biblical allegory. It does work as the haunting fears of someone's brain. It also works as, you know, a statement less on Me Too and more on the patriarchy in general.
Well, this is Alex Garland's third film as director. He did Ex Machina and Annihilation. Yeah. Previously, he was a novelist. He collaborated with Danny Boyle on a bunch of scripts. This feels like a director who had two mostly surprise art house hits and then decided with his third film, Men, how can I just throw it all away? How can I completely take this blank check that A24 has given me and make something that is going to alienate 99% of people that go see this? And then
I think 99% is a little high.
Okay, 98%. Yeah, okay. Yeah. And then somehow they release this in, you know, 2,500 theaters around the country. I mean, it is – I was laughing at a lot of this movie, but I think
– We were laughing too,
but
yeah.
But I think kind of with it because it's
right,
so
right.
It's so insane, especially in that last 20 to 30 minutes where it really goes to places that I was not anticipating and that, frankly, I had not seen before. I would compare this to another movie that Jesse Buckley was in, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, the Charlie Kaufman film. There's a lot of overlap there, especially in terms of the kind of claustrophobia, this idea of sanity possibly slipping, and we're not sure if what we're seeing is what's really happening. And also to Darren Aronofsky's Mother, which is a movie that I love a lot more than most people, I think. But I think that both films are these kind of deliberately divisive, confrontational, and allegorical horror films. And as is the case with Mother, I would say with Men, I'm much less interested in what Garland is saying and more interested in how he's saying it. A friend of mine who I talked to after I saw this movie heard what it was about and said, oh, so this is about things that women have known about since the beginning of time. Yeah. Like, it's almost like Alex Garland suddenly stumbled upon the idea, like, did you know that women find men threatening?
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, Alex, they do. So I'm not so much interested in the metaphor at the center of this movie. I'm more interested in just how truly crazy it gets and just the chutzpah it takes to make a movie like this and to put it out. I mean, this movie is a swing and a half, and it's either going to work for you or it's not.
Yeah,
and I will say that it mostly worked for me, but there were long stretches where I thought, this is either brilliant or really, really stupid.
Yeah, I want to make the point that up until that final half hour, I was really with this movie because, I mean, I'd read things that said, oh, it's an anti-man diatribe. No, it was this one woman's experience.
Trauma. It's about trauma.
Sure.
Exactly. And what I really appreciated was how there was this overweening. I mean, we're in this beautiful place of this English countryside. But as Mary Pat says, it's claustrophobic from the very beginning. And it's the use of music, but it's also Buckley's performance. It's also Roy Kinnear's performance.
But
it's the things that happen and little things that most people would miss. Her hair kept going in her eyes. I kept going, get your hair out of your eyes. That drives me crazy. And she wears this dress that looks like something out of 1920. And it's like, what? Who would wear a dress like that? All these disquieting things.
Yeah, you'd have
things,
on your sweats if you were hanging out by yourself.
All these little things add up to an experience that was just like chalkboard.
It's
fingers
unsettling.
On a chalkboard.
It's unsettling.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then it went over the top. And I just went, oh, come on.
And I think if you're with Men for the movie, that is, not the concept of Men. If you're with the movie up to that point, I can see where you might fall off. But that was kind of where, and I was wrestling with it all the way through the last 20 minutes because, I mean, we should warn people that it gets really graphic and violent in unsettling and inhuman kind of ways and very human ways. But I was kind of wrestling with myself because I thought it's kind of expected. It feels like, you know, like I said, it has a similar ending to Mother, if that's any kind of hint, where I thought, this is maybe a little too much. This is almost like a parody of itself. And then I thought, but that's kind of the beauty of it in a way.
Right. That's what I thought.
It just goes to 11 in such a cascadingly nutso way that I had to appreciate the effort.
And it's about the fungibility of men, after all.
Well, yeah, and it's about, I mean, that's you. A very
no
good
reaction
point.
For that?
And,
that's
a very good point. But it, and it's also just about, you know, men beget men and trauma begets trauma and misogyny begets misogyny. And I mean, it's laid out in a very literal way, but it kind of works.
I might buy into that. I might even accept that. And I might have even liked that had he not added almost an epilogue that suggests maybe this was all just in her head. And it was like, wait a minute, you're taking me back to seriousness now. And that doesn't add up.
That was an odd choice because the movie ends with the title Men on the screen. And it ends in a way that is like a punchline. Mm-hmm. When the title comes up on the screen, it got a laugh out of me because it feels like the punchline of the joke was, Men! And that is kind of what he's
getting at. The aristocrats.
Yeah, exactly. It felt that way. And there's a little bit of the Wicker Man in here, too. Yeah, that idea of, you know, she goes into that pub that looks pretty cozy, but it has all these menacing people inside.
And all men with the
same face. And they all turn and look at her.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So before we go, Mary Pat, I want to say, did we mansplain this enough for you?
Thank you.
That was a joke. That was a joke. And anyway, that was our discussion of Men. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Duke. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
What's going on?
Look. Up ahead.
What's that? Up ahead.
Look up ahead there.
You guys, look. There's something up ahead.
What do you see?
What do you see?
What do you see?
What do you see?
As we look ahead to the future, there's much we don't know.
So true. So true.
So true.
That is the truth.
One thing we do know is that SPR's mission to create a more informed public is as vital as ever. The more you listen to SPR and NPR, the more you hear the world as it really is. We aim to bring more facts, more experts, more of the perspectives that make your world a vibrant place. Thank you for choosing us as your trusted place for news and music programming. We also want to thank those who donated to the station now and through the years. You are a critical part of what will make our work possible. Your generosity and commitment energize us. Thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Alex Garland's film Men. Let's now move to Roger Michell's The Duke. Based on real event, Michell's movie, screenplay by Richard Bean and Clive Coleman, tells the story of the man who, in 1961, confessed to stealing Goya's portrait of the Duke of Wellington from London's National Gallery. As portrayed in the movie, Kempton Bunton, played by Jim Broadbent, is a taxi driver slash bakery worker whose sense of social justice drives him to commit the theft because he thinks public monies would be best spent helping those in society who most need it, specifically retirees living on fixed incomes. Director Michell, a versatile filmmaker whose best-known work is the 1999 Hugh Grant, Julia Roberts romantic comedy Notting Hill, adopts a light tone throughout, not just while documentary Bunton's sense of family, especially his relationship with wife Dorothy, played by Helen Mirren, and son Jackie, played by Fionn Whitehead, but of the theft itself, Bunton's attempt to get the authorities to do the right thing while hiding his actions from Dorothy, his eventual arrest, and the trial that follows. What Michell does best is give both Broadbent and Mirren, but especially Broadbent, the freedom to conceive and play convincing characters, all in the service of the kind of feel-good film that some of us so desperately feel a need for during these trying days of world angst.
Yeah, and there is kind of a tinge of sadness to this because it is Roger Michell's last movie. And it was delayed for, you know, a year because of the pandemic, so we're finally getting it. And there's some sadness, too, in just the central relationship of this family, especially between, you know, the Jim Broadbent and Helen Mirren character, because they've had a loss. One of their kids has died, and they're both dealing with that grief in very different ways. And it's basically the reason that they're drifting apart, and we see that play out. But the movie doesn't dwell on it too much because The Duke is mostly, as you said, a very lighthearted, very sweet British movie. And I found it kind of irresistible on that front. I mean, it's nothing great. I think that it's hinting at social relevance. I love this character and his just complete commitment to this idea of the government is stealing from us and we need to give the money back to the people that need it. And he's fighting specifically about television licenses mm-hmm. because at this time in British history, and I think it's still
same,
part
yeah.
of it, is that you need a license on your TV and you have to pay for it in order to get the BBC. And he's taken a certain coil out of his TV set so that he can't get BBC, which means legally he shouldn't have to pay for a license. And, you know, the hoops that he jumps through in order mm-hmm. to prove his points is really fun. And I mean, it goes without saying that Mirren and Broadbent are going to be good. I mean, these are two Oscar-winning actors who have been giving great performances for decades, and they're really good here, especially Jim Broadbent. Mm-hmm. He's such a lovable guy in this, almost to a fault, because even though you see kind of the weirdness beneath the surface, especially with this play that he's writing that,
eccentricity.
That's about – yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. This play he's writing about his daughter's death that feels both like – therapy, but also a little callous in some ways, like he's trying to cash in on it, that it's unsuccessful, but he's trying. You still really come to love this guy, and you want him to be found innocent. And of course, I looked up the actual case so I knew how it played out, but the movie really stretches out the drama a little bit to kind of ridiculous degrees. But yeah, for the most part, The Duke is just a really sweet 90-minute movie with British people being quirky. And I don't know, I guess the day I saw it, I was really in the mood for something like that. Because I thought it was really sweet.
Well, we hadn't gone to see it earlier because we were like, oh, I don't know, is this going to be hokey or what? And I think it was really charming. So yeah. I would advise people to go see this because of the performances. And I will also give a shout out to Fionn Whitehead, because here's this guy with whom I was completely unfamiliar who plays the son.
He was in Dunkirk, the Christopher Nolan movie.
Right,
but
right.
So, he wasn't really playing a character in that. He's kind of a type in that.
Correct.
In that movie.
So, and he has to hold his own against two Academy Award winning actors. I was a little concerned about Helen Mirren, that it was going to trip over the edge in terms of her playing this sort of dowdy older woman. And she pulls it back in a way that
absolutely.
It was still certainly believable. And it was a little cutesy at times, like some of these courtroom scenes, you know, everybody's kind of looking at each other and the person who's the bailiff, you know, she's trying to stifle a smile always and
yeah,
so
he's
forth.
He's got so many laugh lines in those scenes where he's testifying and everything he's – everyone laughs because he's so charming
right,
and funny.
Because that always happens in court. And then we have the performance by Matthew Good, who plays his
barrister
yeah. who I also thought held his own here, mm-hmm. certainly. So mm-hmm. it's a little movie and not at the same time.
Yeah, I just think that Michelle, the poor lamented Michelle, died unexpectedly at age 65. I mean, that feels very young to me these mm-hmm. days. If you go back and look at his career, I mean, Notting Hill is one of those classic 90s rom-coms. It was just the epitome of Hugh Grant, the epitome of Julia Roberts and playing those kinds of movies. He had a real facility for making a movie. And talking about Mirren, there's one scene in which she comes in and she discovers that the portrait is in there, that her husband, she thinks, has stolen it, and
he's hidden it in like a bureau
yeah,
behind a
wardrobe.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But he's pulled it out because someone has found out, and he's going to have to take it back. And that scene could have been overplayed by so many actresses, and Mirren plays it just perfectly. And just in sitting down on the bed and her expression, I went, "That is a performance." I mean, she's not even saying anything at this point. So, and what can you say about Broadbent? I mean, he is just absolutely the epitome of this character.
Yeah, and after I saw The Duke, I was going through on IMDb and just kind of looking through both Roger Michell's career and Jim Broadbent's career. And so maybe we could talk about that a little bit, because Broadbent is one of those guys who came out of British theater and British television. I mean, British television has so much theater on it. There's a lot of overlap
Correct.
There, especially back in the 70s and 80s when he started. But this is a guy that I think for a lot of audiences, especially American audiences, became aware of him through his work with Mike Leigh. And, you know, those movies are these kind of kitchen sink dramas. You want to talk about eccentricity.
Right.
There's eccentricity to spare in all of those Mike
and
Leigh films.
And very little humor.
Life is Sweet. And there's humor on the fringes, but it's tinged with
sadness.
And that kind of blue-collar drudgery
yes.
that he brings to it. And then, of course, he was in Moulin Rouge, which is a big performance, and he won his Oscar for Iris against playing against Judi Dench. And then he was in some of the Harry Potter movies. And
so, he was nominated
and the Paddington
for
movies.
That movie about the Pirates of Penzance.
It was Topsy Turvy.
Yes, exactly.
Another Mike Leigh movie. And so, yeah, he's had such an interesting career, and yet he rarely gets to be the lead in a film. Helen Mirren
has had more leads than he has. Character actor in many respects.
And then you look at Roger Michell's career, and as you said, you know, he started with Notting Hill. That was his first big movie, maybe his first feature, I want to say. But he's done he did so many strange things. He did that thriller Changing Lanes with Ben Affleck and Samuel Jackson, that movie Enduring Love that was about a hot air balloon accident. That's a really strange one. And then Venus, which was one of Peter O'Toole's last performances. So these are people that are reliable, I think, when it comes to delivering a piece of work that is kind of lived in and comfortable and
a crowd pleaser in a good way.
Yeah, a crowd pleaser in a way that, like you said, I mean, I agree with you that there are points in, especially in the courtroom scenes, which take up like most of the last half hour of this movie, that do feel very scripted and very, you know, there's basically a laugh track during those scenes. It becomes like a sitcom almost. But, you know, you go with it because Jim Broadbent is so believable as this guy.
Well, and I also really liked the set design of this film. I mean, because you're trying to capture Birmingham in the 1960s. And, you know, we're accustomed to seeing this sort of Peaky Blinders from the century before grittiness of this environment and so forth.
Or later in the decade where it became the swingin' London.
Right.
You know?
And it sort of captures this moment in time in a way that felt authentic and felt respectful of the environment. And of course, there's the rain, which plays a big part in various aspects of this. And I don't know, I just liked the family relationship. I liked the portrayal of how the legal system sometimes gets it right, or ordinary people who are ensnared in the legal system sometimes
get
it right.
And it's not stuffy. There's kind of a jazzy style to it. There's lots of split screen.
Yeah. And the movie progresses, the narrative progresses very smoothly but efficiently. And I'm just saying, if you're in a depressed mood, go and see The Duke. It will brighten your day. And that was our discussion of The Duke, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder and Mary Pat Truthart and I discussed Alex Garland's Men. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarbert for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, remember these words from the French dramatist Jean Racine. Life is a comedy to those who think, a tragedy to those who feel. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.